We are here for things nobody tells you, and this is all about consent and the fact that consent conversations can start from birth. And I have got one of our OG experts, Vanessa, can I call you that?
If you want to, you can call me whatever you like.
One of our original contributors and experts here, Vanessa Hamilton from Talking the Talk Sex Education. And whenever we have these conversations around consent and boundaries and respect, I mean, you're my go-to because you have not only taught so many kids through the work that you do with schools and all the education that you do for parents, but you've written two books as well.
I have, yes.
Which is pretty amazing.
Thanks.
So we are going to be uncovering, I guess, what consent looks like from birth and how to really have age-appropriate conversations. And I think if I've learned anything over the years, it's that, you know, these ongoing practical little things that we can take with us is going to make all the difference as they get older. So thanks
definitely
for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Probably just good to start with reminding people that the things that we're going to be talking about today really won't be suitable for little children's ears. So now's the time to turn it off if there's kids in the car and revisit it later. And also just to acknowledge that not everyone's experiences of sex and sexuality are positive ones. And sometimes just listening to these topics and having these conversations can bring up difficult thoughts and feelings for people. So I just want people to acknowledge that, see how they feel within themselves, and think about getting some support such as 1-800-RESPECT or Centre Against Sexual Assault, and reach out to someone, a trusted person, if that's happening for them.
Absolutely. Very important warning there. So yes, no little ears around for these conversations.
Correct.
But of course, making sure that you are bookmarking it to come back to, because it is one that is going to be extremely valuable for anyone, whether you're just about to enter your parenting journey or of course you're already in the midst of it all.
That's right.
Because let's face it, some of these conversations we have not had ourselves growing up as well.
We mostly grew up with an approach that's related to fear, shame and danger in regard to relationships and bodies and sex and sexuality. Our parents probably did the best they could with what they had, but there's so much more information for us now, and we can break that cycle by reverting to a more positive outlook and a more empowering outlook for kids. There is actually expected development and behaviour at all age groups in relation to respect, consent, sex and sexuality. And that information is out there. And I hope parents can do a bit of research to find out what they should be talking about at what age with their children.
And that's what I love so much, I guess, about your book, you know, that it is broken down into those ages and stages. And it can be quite confronting when you get a curly question from a child and you're not quite sure how to respond. But I think just having that little bit of groundwork gives you the confidence to be able to handle those. And I'm hoping today with some of the hints that you're going to give, even just the responses of acknowledging when we might need to look into something as well. So, yes.
So if we're going to start with consent, that's a topic that is a big word at the moment. Lots of people hear about it. It was never spoken about a lot in the past, but thankfully we talk a lot more about it now. But people often just associate it with sex and relationships and intimate encounters and those sorts of things. But actually, consent is part of everyday being a human.
Yeah.
And the relevance to children is from a young age. It can be as unrelated to sex. It can be as simple as mutually negotiating an enjoyable game to play.
Yeah.
At kinder that everyone wants to play, managing your disappointment when your friend says, no, I don't want to play that. So giving that our kids those skills, even when they're very little, helps them throughout their life, and especially when they get into their intimate encounters later on in life. They've got those scaffolded skills already there. But it's also teaching them about body safety as well.
Absolutely. And I think often we just want to palm it off to the school and go, oh, they're going to be able to do it there. But I love what you say, I guess, about that it really can start from birth. And I think a lot of the time in the beginning, we need the practice ourselves of how to practice that in everyday settings. I mean, I've seen the newspaper articles, oh, why do you need to ask permission to change a baby's nappy, and all of these people that get a bee in their bonnet. I would love for us to start there, I guess,
sure,
and explain that, you know, it is as simple as those things.
That's right. Babies don't get to choose whether their nappy needs changing or not. but they do have, they can have some autonomy in relation to that happening to them. So when we talk about body safety, we're giving children body autonomy, and they can make choices about who's going to kiss and hug them and when things are going to happen to their body. with exception of their health and well-being. So we say to kids, you get to make lots of choices, but when it comes to your health and well-being and hygiene, I have to make those decisions for you. So if I have to grab your hand to cross the road, that's to keep you safe and healthy.
Yes.
When you're older, you'll get to make those decisions. And it's the same as needing to clean your bottom. When your bottom is dirty, I need to clean it to keep you safe and healthy. And so you will have to do that. But you can say things like, would you like to crawl to the change table? Or would you like me to put you up onto the change table? So just think about the language that you're using. Mm. You're giving the child options and the idea that they can speak up and have choices around what's happening. It's also really important to narrate what you're doing when you're cleaning them or in the bath so that they know what a typical nappy change or a typical bathing situation should be.
Yes.
So you're saying, I'm just lifting your bottom to put the nappy under, and you can even say, can you lift your bottom up so I can put the nappy under to keep you clean? And children, even pre-verbal, can communicate with their eyes and their muscle tension. So keep an eye on that sort of thing. If they're hesitant and cry every time you go to change their nappy, just be aware of that. Mm. And so when we're doing body safety training, and even for little toddlers, so things like their body is their body. They don't have to kiss or hug someone if they don't want to. Sorry, relatives. Yeah, so we should be giving the message that they do have autonomy, and look, most kids are happy to have a hug, but not all kids are hug loving.
Yes.
And it's actually the day I was Ingrid, my co-author on the consent book that we wrote for 8 to 12 year olds, Kit and Arlo Find a Way. That day, I was in a classroom with 5 year olds, and they were doing their activity. They'd watched a video about not everyone are hug loving people, and she's drawing the body boundary around the body and colouring in the bathers because the bathers cover your private parts.
Yeah.
And she said, this tiny little dot of a thing, she said, I'm so glad you taught me about that hugging thing. I just hug anyone whenever I want to. And her little friend said, yeah, she does. You know? And I thought to myself, we can teach little children about consent. And Ingrid rang me that day and said, do you want to write a consent book? I said, yes, I do.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, it's not just from adults as well. It's with each other. It's those verbal and nonverbal cues.
Can I say something on that? My youngest daughter, who has a disability, she has global delays. And she went through a phase of doing that too, and she just wanted to keep hugging people.
Right.
And it was quite awkward there at one point. So I remember we were at Luna Park doing something, and she went to hug this strange person, and she was at a certain height, and I was just like, oh dear. Yeah, it was just a very awkward kind of situation.
Do you think you could have distracted her to say, if you wanted to go to a person, you can perhaps touch them on the hand or the arm or the elbow?
Well, thankfully we're out of this stage now. Yeah. But, yes, exactly. I like that as a strategy.
Be creative,
Yeah.
So, again, most children will happily hug or kiss, but you can say, you can high five instead. You can give the children the language. So say, no thanks today, I'd rather just high five or give you a wave instead. Mm. And if the relatives get a bit upset, we need to think about the fact that the child is not responsible for the intimacy needs of that I was going to say parent, but or any adult.
Yes.
Some adults will think it's disrespectful.
Well, I have experienced that before, and that, you know, well, no, you should. And they think your child's being rude. And I remember you telling me this many years ago, and I'm guessing culturally this is also impacted as well.
Yeah, and lots of just family dynamics.
Yeah.
So bring the adults in on the education of the body safety. Bring the books over and get them to read the body safety books to the kids so that they learn themselves, because they've never heard this or been taught this information.
Yes. Is this where your Kit and Arlo?
Yeah, Kit and Arlo's for the 8 to 12 year olds, but there's lots of body safety books out there for little toddlers and children. And we should be giving them age appropriately throughout.
Yes.
You know, even a consent book when they're 15, it doesn't stop the education.
Well, we'll be able to share some of those resources, because I know we've got quite a great list, which I think matches up with all of the ones that you recommend as well for the little ones.
The other thing to think about is feelings and their bodies and their early warning signs. Mm-hmm. So teaching them from a very early age, how does their body feel? What does that make you feel like? So that if they get their early warning signs, like feeling sick in the tummy or wanting to cry or wobbly knees or sweating or wanting to go to the toilet when someone's making them feel unsafe, they need to tell someone on their safety network. And this is relevant for teenagers too.
Yes.
You know, if you're in a situation with someone and you're getting early warning signs, you need to get out of there if you can and tell someone as soon as you can. You know, you say things like, you know, when a dog barks at you and your body gets really scared, if another adult or another kid makes you feel like that. So remember to say another child.
Yes, okay.
Okay, it's not just if an adult does that to you. Yep. If another child
yep.
gives you your early warning signs, you need to tell someone on your safety network. I actually like to have five named from kinder or school and yep. five outside of okay. kinder or school. And if kids haven't got that many people in their life, they can have the bigger kids, can have Kids Helpline or the police. But, yeah, specifically naming who they should go to.
Okay.
And secrets and surprises are important.
Ooh, yes. Actually, I only had this happen yesterday.
Oh.
Ishk, my eldest, was trying to be very helpful with her little sister and she said, it's okay, Mum, I've got a – can I tell you a secret, Nunu? And I went, Ishki, remember, we don't tell secrets. Oh, yes, Mum. Okay. So we're better. And then she sort of twisted the conversation straight away. It was Did a good she? Correction. But, yes, it is this whole concept around telling secrets.
Because someone who's grooming a child will say, this is just between us. Don't tell anyone about it. So secrets must always be told because surprises are always told, the chocolate cake and the birthday present.
Yeah.
That's going to be told. Yeah. Yes. I had to say to a relative, no, the kids don't not tell Mum about the chocolate biscuits yeah. because we don't have secrets.
Yes, yeah. And don't tell Mum that you had an extra chocolate.
Yeah, yeah. No, we yeah. don't have secrets. We tell each other everything.
Yeah.
And body boundaries, you know, talking about the private parts. Now, private parts are important to name. We know it's protective to name body parts accurately.
Yes.
It's okay to have family names. I've heard some very funny family names working in classrooms, let
me
tell
you. I can imagine. You'll have a whole database.
Some people will be mortified to hear what their kids have told me. But in the bath, you know, little pre-verbal children, we talk about eyes, nose, ear, vulva, penis, scrotum, yep. without shame.
Yep, exactly.
Yep. So, as I said, you can have the family names, but they need to know. I say to the kids, you know, if they've say Willy Wonka, I say, if you went to the doctor, you had a problem with your penis and you said to the doctor, I've got my Willy Wonka is sore. Yeah. Is the doctor going to know what you're talking about? And they just roll around laughing hysterically. So make it lighthearted.
Yes. It shouldn't be, yes, this big scary thing. It just is what it is.
It's kids' human right to learn about their bodies
yes.
and to learn about respectful relationships.
Yes.
And it's not inappropriate or rude or pornography for children to learn about the human body because they have that body.
Exactly.
And it's protective.
Yep.
And there's plenty of people out there listening that will say, I never learned and there was shame around bodies.
Yeah.
But that's our own stuff.
Exactly. You know? I actually, and again, I come up against this sometimes with my husband, Sabir, because he's grown up in a very different setting. I'm Dutch. He's Indian heritage.
Right.
They're very different.
Oh, yeah, they're very different, yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, it is that approach and that. And I always do remind him. I say, no, the kids don't need to, like, that's not a problem. It's okay. It's nothing to be ashamed of. And it's funny, I will say on the little nickname, so he calls it Gully. In India, they call it Gully. Anyway, so I tried really hard to get my son to stop calling it Gully because he needed to call it a penis. And then my best friend came over and I did not know that her little son's nickname was Gully.
Oh, dear.
So next thing, she's calling out Gully and then all of us turn around and have a look and I was like, see, this is the reason why we can't call it a Gully.
Oh, that's a great story. That's right. Yeah, so the nicknames are fun and, you know, lighthearted, but I think a lot of parents need to do a bit of work. We need to do a bit of homework. Dig deep into what we're thinking and feeling.
Yes.
And I often say that to adults, so adults have layer upon layer upon layer of stuff in our heads about sex and sexuality.
Yeah.
And it's irrelevant to the child in front of us or the simple conversation or the simple situation in front of us. So, for example, if children are playing doctors and nurses, you know, no clothes on and stethoscopes, I'll tell you a story about a parent said to me once, the 9-year-old come out and said, you better get in there, they've got no clothes on. So in she goes and the two cousins, both 4 years old, I think, sure enough, no clothes on and stethoscope out. And she said, oh, okay. She kept her poker face on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what we see is sexualized.
Yes.
But is that what they're doing?
Yeah.
It isn't. They're actually role-playing.
Yes.
They're curious. She said, oh, I'm glad I saw that. That reminds me we need to talk about who can touch body parts and who can't. Let's get dressed, out to the kitchen, milk and cookies.
Yeah.
And she said, so what were you doing in there? And they said, well, we were playing privates. And she said, what's privates? And they said, well, we didn't know what to do. We were bored, so we just sniffed each other's butt. So after a debrief with me, and I think she had half a bottle of wine, she felt a lot better. She was okay. But, you know, it's innocent and expected if it's lighthearted, it's curious, the same age and development, so one doesn't have an intellectual disability, one does, for example, so there's no power, there's no adult themes, and there's many more aspects to that. And I've documented that in my book, for example, when it's typically expected behaviour.
Okay.
And you just can distract them to the toys instead, you know. I remember a parent telling me that two little kids in the bath just constantly play with each other's willy, laughing their heads off, and she just couldn't do anything about it. They thought it was hilarious. But, you know, there's shame around that as well. Yeah. So we've got a lot of issues around kids touching their own genitals.
Yes.
We call it genital touching when they're younger, not masturbation, because it's self-soothing.
Yes.
Feels good, like sucking
and
their thumb.
And actually, I remember that has caught quite a few people I know by surprise when you, and I've got two girls and a boy.
Yeah.
And it is, yes, when they're self-soothing, it is quite a shock at first because you actually...
Because of what we think.
Yeah.
Because the layers in our head. But it's actually typically expected behaviour.
Yes.
If it's easily distracted, if it's not forceful or causing problems.
Yeah.
You know, so no shame. So I know it feels good to touch your vulva, but where's a private place where you can do that? Because you need to teach privacy as well.
Yes, that was going to be my question, actually. How do you kind of guide distract that in a way that's appropriate?
Yeah. And just back to the examples of what's not typically expected, you know, the two little three-year-olds, same age, laughing and touching each other's willy curiously. Penis. Curiously, it can be typically expected, but it's not typically expected if one's locking the cubby door at kinder and pulling the pants down of the other one.
Okay.
Okay, so that would be alarming adult themes.
Yeah, and it is hard though when you're observing things, because I remember recently my kids were obviously a bit older, they're in primary school, but there was a mum that was concerned because there was one of the kids kept pinching or grabbing her child on the bum all the time
at
play. And so she was very, very concerned about that and had escalated that. And then, you know, I've experienced it where there's a little girl that's always wanting to compare undies, you know, with my little daughter who, again, has the speech delay. And I'm very obviously conscious of making sure that we don't entertain anything around that. So,
that's,
you know, it's all these little things that you think, oh, you just don't know whether you're overreacting. You know, if there's lots of wee, poo, that type of talk.
Yeah, so that again is typically expected if it's lighthearted and curious. But if it's problematic, causing other people harm or discomfort, then that's when it becomes.
So the touching of someone else where it's through play, that's not consent.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you're teaching consent. Did you ask if you could touch their body? Did they ask you? You know, we want kids to think their default position to be, is everybody safe? Do I feel safe?
Yes.
And you can start that messaging very early. And that scaffolds through their whole life into their intimate encounters.
I remember you saying something about tying shoelaces, and that always stuck in my head. I mean, what are some of the ways, I guess, if we look at those very young kids that we do start modelling consent? Mm.
Well, so in classrooms I would say to kids, okay, we're going to get in three lines. In one line, if you would like me to tie your shoelaces, go into this line. If you're not sure, go into the middle. And if you don't want that, hop into that line. And so we say the people in the middle who said they're not sure whether they want me to tie their shoelaces, are they giving consent? And the kids get it. They say, no, they're not, because consent has to be a clear yes. Mm. For the kids, you know, that's complex. Consent is complex.
Yes.
It isn't always a clear yes. It's about verbal and nonverbal cues as well, and getting them to start understanding those nuances with their friends and with people. But you do that with them as well. So you can say to them, looks like you're not really sure that you want to keep being tickled.
Mm.
So I'm going to stop now.
Yes.
But model that consent. Yeah.
Yes.
Would you like to play tickling now or later or not at all?
And actually,
those choices.
I have a kid that does not like to be tickled.
Correct.
And when he did it, he said it once. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I said, thank you for telling me that. Now that I know that you don't like it, I will not do it again.
Yep.
And I think sometimes we can apologise in the home setting, or we can, I think we sometimes think we have to get it right all the time and that, you know.
Well, we can say, you know, I don't really feel like having a cuddle today. Can we just hold hands while we're walking or doing whatever? Just modelling that consent is really, really important.
Yeah. And I'm guessing in relationships, partners, you know, making sure the power dynamics, all of those things in the home.
That's absolutely right. So we don't want inequity in a partnership. So and when you're thinking about coercive control and all of those things, they're education that we can start very early. Again, do your research, parents, just to have a bit of understanding about that. And some people might think, oh, this is all too hard.
Yeah.
It's not too hard.
It's not.
It's the most important thing you can do. You need to be the tellable, askable parent, your child or carer, your child needs you to be.
Yes.
There's plenty of teachable moments around for you to do that. Yeah, talking in the car is really good with the bigger kids. Yes. Everyone's facing forward. They're a captive audience.
Yes. I actually recall driving once my daughter, I don't know where we had been. We'd been visiting friends. It was past bedtime.
Mm.
We were driving over the Anzac Bridge and next thing she started asking something about. Yeah, it was, and I thought her little sister was asleep in the back and it turns out she was not. She heard some things. Not age appropriate, but just, yeah, it came up after that afterwards. But I will say whenever those conversations are out where babies come from, I've spoken about it for years with my kids, they're always just more amazed about how you can make them in a lab.
You can make them in a lab as well. Yeah, that's amazing. You know, my take-home message to parents is, who do you want to be the person who delivers this information to your child?
Mm.
Who do you want to be the person who gives them information about sex, sexuality, yes, respect, relationships and consent?
Yep.
You want it to be you. Yep. Children are getting a message, an education, every day from the world around them, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
And it's not usually the one that we want them to have. So you need to get in first. So when the younger sibling's in the car, so I say have the conversation anyway because they're going to hear it from the older ones.
Yeah.
I've often had that conversation with all three of them in the car and then gone to the older one later and said, I just want to add a little bit more for you for that conversation that we had in the car. That works really well.
Yes.
Yeah, but do you want the spiel of how babies are made?
Can you? Why not? Because I think for anyone listening, I mean, this is, and I've learned everything I know from you. It's a bit more than when, you know, we had the Where Babies Are Come From book that gets thrown sort of on the bookshelf.
There's
in the
some
playroom.
Better ones now. There's some much better good. Books out there that are much more inclusive and talk about all the different ways babies can be created. Because, you know, there's lots of different ways.
And this is the thing, I think when you talk, and you're going to give us the spiel, but when you talk so practically about it and all the different amazing ways. Yeah, it's funny that the things they take away from it, like my kids, it's the lab-made babies.
Yeah, hilarious.
So although give us the spiel.
They might ask you private questions, so make sure I go back to that in a minute. I'll give you an example of that. But so take it or leave it. Here's a spiel that you can use about the amazing story of how babies are made. And remember, you want to be the one to tell them. And you can say that babies are created lots of different ways, and you can talk about IVF and all the other things if you want to, and there's some books, great books around that. But you can say the most typical way that babies are created is when two people decide they want to make a baby, a person with a penis and testicles and a person with a vulva and a vagina. They have a lot of discussion about it. They love and respect each other. You can say they're married or whatever your values are. When they're ready, they'll choose a private place and time. They'll be enjoying each other's bodies, usually with no clothes on. When they're ready, the vagina will accept the penis will deliver the sperm, and the sperm will travel up to meet the egg. Full stop. Most kids will say, great, can I have a biscuit?
Yeah. You know?
It'll go over their head if it's too much.
Yeah.
Bigger kids especially might say, that's disgusting. Why would they do that? And that's your opportunity to say, that's right, kids think that's disgusting because it's not for kids.
Yes.
That's for adult minds and bodies only.
Yes.
And it takes a long time for minds and bodies to be ready for that sort of activity.
Mm.
But it's important for us to know the amazing story of how babies are made. Isn't it a fascinating story?
Yes.
Be really positive about it. Be the person that they can come and ask you questions. And people are often worried they're going to tell the other kids at school.
Mm.
Yes, they might. Mm. At least it's accurate.
Yes.
But you can say, look, we have all these conversations in our household. You can ask us anything, but not all families do that.
Mm.
And it's not your job to teach the other kids at school.
Yes.
That's their adult's job to do that. So this isn't really a playground chat.
Yeah.
And anything you hear in the playground, you come and ask me and I'll tell you about it.
Yes. And I think that is important because it has happened to me where I have had to say to them that it's up to their parents to have the conversation in a way that works for them. But, you know, mummy's very lucky. I get to work with all these amazing people and have this information. But it's, my daughter was reading, my daughter's friend was reading a book. I'm going to get the name of the book wrong. But anyway, she's quite advanced in her reading. They're only in year five now. And Ish comes home and she says to me, Mum, there's this book that Nina's reading and there's a fake sex scene in there. And I went, oh, is there fake sex scene? I said, and so what is a fake sex scene? She goes, well, it's where you fake having a baby or making a baby. And I was like, oh, there's a big missing piece in my education here, because actually, Ish, it's not the only reason people have sex is not just to make a baby. Oh, so then it was that conversation that we had to have to explain why there was fake sex.
And did you get the question I got when I had that conversation? So one of them realised, you know, because I try and be positive and talk about pleasure, and adults do have pleasurable encounters with their bodies, and it is for adults' minds and bodies only. But that's also about body safety, because adults know that it's not for kids.
Yes.
So you're letting them know that if an adult ever did that with them, that wouldn't be okay, and it's not okay for kids to do it with other kids.
Yes.
Right? You actually have to say these things.
Yes.
And that's why you're seeing that on the news, because that person's going to jail, because you don't do that to children's bodies.
Yes.
But we've got to talk about pleasure, respect, consent, mutuality, enjoyment, all of those things, till we're blue in the face, because over here, the bubble that they're getting information from, pornography, shows that I will remain nameless, you know, that talk about relationships, if that's their only frame of reference, it's really problematic.
It is.
So, yeah, the child realising that people have sexual encounters other than to make babies, and I got the question, so have you done it more than three times? Do you do it when we're in the house?
I haven't got that type of question just yet.
So that's a perfect opportunity to talk about privacy. So you can say, I'll give you as much information as relevant for your learning, but I won't be sharing all my personal information.
Good, yes.
And actually, this is a pornography talk without talking about pornography. So you can say, so two people who love and care and respect for each other, they keep their relationship details to themselves. It's very private and special. So if you were to ever see what they say is sex on the internet or naked adult bodies, you know that it's not realistic because it's out in public.
Yes.
All right. Like, so they're your first conversations around pornography.
Which we always think is so much further in the distance than what it is, because I only found out the other day from another mum that there was a girl that happened to be connected with my daughter on Messenger, and I'm privy to all these conversations.
Right.
But I did not know that a year ago there was apparently porn shared around. And, you know, people were getting counselling, the mums were all, but here I was.
You didn't know.
I had no idea.
Yep.
And thankfully, like, I am accidentally logged in as my daughter on her Messenger, so I can see absolutely everything.
Which you should.
Which I should.
For that age.
But yeah, my login is, so sometimes they think it's her and it's me. Someone goes, you can write on their messages. I'm like, yes, I can.
Absolutely. It's like the whole world out there. You're going to let the world into their bedroom? No, you're not.
No,
so
way.
You are absolutely, pay more attention.
Yeah.
More supervision, people. You know, my poor kids, poor things. We've always had, you know, even the 14-year-old had to put the phone on charge in the kitchen with the sleepover. And, you know, the last time that they came over, the kids came and go, where are we putting the phones, Vanessa? Here they are. I don't take them off them. They know where they are.
Yeah.
But I set up and you know, my son said, where are you setting up the charging station, Mum?
Good on
Children
you.
Don't need devices at sleepovers.
No.
It's so dangerous
no.
for that to happen. They're tired. Their brains are not thinking properly. They need to play.
Yeah.
Even when they're bigger. And I've always done that, and you know, you go past and they're having such great conversations with each other.
They're not sitting in there distracted or I'm taking that one from you. That's another one.
So, you know, I've always rung ahead to sleepovers, who's going to be there, what devices, you know, the unsupervised iPad just should not be in bedrooms, should not be in bathrooms. It just shouldn't be. I brought my phone into the bathroom. What was I thinking? I could have accidentally taken a picture of a naked body, and that would be a problem because I would have a naked body picture on my phone.
Yeah.
Right? So you don't have to have a conversation. You've just said that it's not okay to take pictures of naked bodies.
Yes.
You know, the teenagers like taking pictures of naked bodies of each other and sharing it, and that's something that's pretty confronting for parents to understand, that sharing sexual imagery between each other is part of their romantic partnerships. Now, there'll be people out there saying they shouldn't do that. It is illegal. You need to tell them about the legalities, but you must not shame them, because the majority of them, once they get to older ages, will actually do that. So we don't want to shame and put down their typical behaviours.
Yes.
And again, it's typically expected if it's lighthearted, if it's consensual, if it's mutual.
Yep.
But it is illegal for them to have those images on their phones, even if it's themselves.
So what about the younger kids? Because my youngest one, again, her level of understanding, she knows what's going on. She's probably playing things and consuming content she shouldn't online, which we're working through at the moment.
Yep.
She knows how to access certain...
Right. They all do. They're very clever.
They're very clever. And she, the other day, she was just very innocently, I'm sure, taking photos of herself, but again, it was without the clothes.
Yeah.
Next thing, we're doing the poses, and I was like, whoa, okay, hang on a minute.
Again, it's typically expected behaviour for children to mimic what they see. Mm. So that song, that singer making, you know, those gestures, the kids will imitate that.
Yeah.
So it's about having that conversation. That's actually an adult way of dancing. It's not usually how children dance. Mind you, some of the dances that kids do at dance school.
Holy moly. I know. I thankfully mine's at a very innocent looking school.
Yeah. It's it can be problematic, and it's about that adults, kids, what's typically expected, what's appropriate, but without shame. You want them to always come to you and tell you.
Yep.
They will muck up, that things will go wrong in their life, and you need to be that tellable, askable parent, as I said before.
Yes. Yep. I like this, being an askable parent, because I think, you want to be the person that they can come to no matter what.
Which includes not taking the device off them when something happens. Parents will go, right, I'm stopping Snapchat. No, well, that's stopped now anyway. But, you know.
Are you listening, Sabir? Yeah.
Taking the device off them, they're not going to come and tell you the next time something happens. Yes. If they think you're going to stop them communicating with their friends or taking the device off them, you do need to put strategies in place to prevent that happening, because children will see pornography accidentally or intentionally. It's not a matter of when, it's a matter, not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Yes.
And just on that, I know we're talking about little kids, but I really want to just mention sexual extortion.
Yeah, can we? Because I only just saw something again this morning in the paper.
Yeah, so, you know, 13-year-old boys, I actually got on my phone, I was sexually extorted the other night, actually. They started sending me messages.
Really?
I should have got that out and shown you. But these organisations, they put enough messages out there that they'll capture the 13-year-old boy sitting in their room on their own, or, you know, all genders are at risk. But they start the chat. Oh, hi, sorry, I didn't. Oh, are you right to chat now? And I actually was waiting for a call from the footy coach. And it was from a different number, though. And I thought, oh, maybe he's on his work phone.
Yeah.
I got sort of sucked into it. And I said, oh, just checking who this is.
Yeah.
Oh, this is Mia. Is this Paul? And I thought, here we go. So I kept it going. Good, so I got you the content. No, it's not Paul. What makes you think it's Paul? I said. And she said, oh, sorry. Have I got the wrong number? I hope I haven't bothered you. You sound really nice. Where do you live? Wow. You know, and it just went on and on. And it takes no time at all for them to engage a child. And they're very, very, very good at getting a sexual image out of the child.
Yep.
And then it turns nasty straight away. I'm going to share this on your Facebook. Look, I've got all your Facebook contacts. I'm going to share it with your family if you don't give me money or more sexual photos.
My gosh.
Called sexual extortion. Talk to your kids about it. Go, everybody, right now, go to after you finish listening to the podcast, eSafety Commissioner should be on speed dial for every parent. Go to the parent section of eSafety.gov.au.
It's scary, though, that that can happen so quickly.
So quickly.
And not just necessarily for those that have a phone. I have heard recently Roblox. And again,
Roblox hasn't been banned. And Roblox is...
I told my kids it was being banned, and then they came home from school and said, no, it's not, Mum.
I was like, yes, it is.
Still get it. but again, young, vulnerable kids. I heard a story recently, you know, quite smart parents onto it across the content, and they had intercepted something where in one of the games in the chats, there was someone had asked the daughter, the young girl, do you like ice cream? What flavour ice cream? How do you lick your ice cream? And it started evolving.
And there it goes.
There it goes.
That's grooming.
Yep.
They're very good at it. And it doesn't matter who you are or how educated or all the things, it can happen to anyone, because groomers are very good at it. And they, you know, in real life, they'll groom a community. They'll groom a whole community, not just parents or teachers.
It's terrifying.
Or whatever. Yeah, yeah. So the best thing we can do is learn about that and read and do your research. And there's, as I said, there's plenty of resources out there. Or Western Australian Government one is Talk Soon, Talk Often. Like, we'll list all of these. But respect.gov.au, consent.gov.au, Australian resources. We're very lucky to have fantastic resources.
Yes.
Just spend some time doing the research.
And I think too, and not discounting how important it is from a very early age, like you might not be there yet, your kid may not be anywhere near school, but just again, it's as simple as having those open and honest conversations from a very young age, like around the dinner table. Or the more practice you get as a parent, the easier it's going to be when it does get to situations
As
like
I've
that.
Always said, it's never too early or too late to start the conversations. A parent once said at a parent session, I do lots of parent sessions on Zoom, which is really convenient for parents, and they really enjoy it. And one parent said that their seven-year-old, a girl, had asked them about what is a tampon, you know, last week, and she said, I just couldn't go there. I just palmed her off. I just just ignored the question. But this morning, when she asked me where did I go last night, I said I went to a sexual health talk and I'm going to buy some books and we're going to have conversations. So,
yeah,
you know, ease yourself into it. Yes. Be brave. Just give simple information. Ask some more. And if you're dying inside from a question, keep your poker face on and you can ask them a question. Say, oh, what made you think of that? What do you know about that already? That buys you some time and it gives you an understanding of where they're at.
Mm, and you're not just talking at the speed of...
yes, yeah, wondering. Or say, great question. It's really important that I give you a very good answer. Can we wait till we get home from Nana's? Yeah. And I'll follow that up with you. Make sure you do follow it up.
Yes.
And the other one, I use my pink acronym, which is instead of pink with embarrassment, think pink. So when you've walked in and there's pornography or something's happened or they tell you something... P for pause.
Yep.
I for inhale, which will help you pause. Inhale. Get down next to the child. Don't be standing over them.
Yep.
Sit next to them. And what's the kindest word that can come out of your mouth at that point in time? Rather than, what are you doing?
Yes.
You can say, I'm so glad I saw that.
Yes.
That means that I can help you with that. You need my help with that on your iPad.
Oh my gosh, I'm adding the pink acronym.
Yeah, pink. Right, it's in my book, so it's like, yeah.
Pause. You just,
and there's a whole lot of conversations. Inhale down next to them. And kindest words. And if you're in the car, rather than next, you're already next to them, turn the radio down. Mm. You know, engage and have that conversation. Yeah. Be the person they know that no matter what, they're going to tell you, they can tell you, and you will be there for them.
Yes. And do you think a lot of parents sometimes miss these opportunities or these cues? And again, not to shame any parents, but we all have our headphones, we're all busy, we're distracted. I've seen it. My kid's trying to say something, you know, to either myself or my partner, and you're in the middle of work or whatever. Yep. Yeah, I think sometimes it's all those little subtle.
Yeah. We're doing that all the time, aren't we? We're not perfect.
No, definitely not.
But as long as we're doing a better job than what happened in the past, perhaps. But the other thing around these conversations, not only, you know, it's not so much the content, it's the tone. So what you're demonstrating is that this is a talkable topic.
Yes.
And not only are you demonstrating that they can talk about it, they can talk to their partners in the future, but they'll talk to their children.
Yeah.
So your tone is much more important. And I say to parents, you know, that there'll be parents listening going, but my 15-year-old says, la, 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 I don't want to hear this. I've got one of those.
Yeah.
That's okay. You can say, look, I know you don't want to talk about this. This is really awkward. I'm feeling really awkward as well. But I just need 5 minutes of your time to tell you something really important.
Yeah.
And you just say it.
Yeah.
You won't get anything back, but you've said it. They are listening.
Yeah.
So to acknowledge, you know, that question I answered the other day, I was a bit flustered. I really have had to think about it and I'd like to change what I said to you.
Yeah. You can remedy it at any time.
Correct. You can always go back. And people say they haven't got the language and I say to parents, anything you say is better than nothing.
Exactly. And this is the thing, you think about how many people are missing out on these, you know, really important conversations because the parents find it too hard or too overwhelming. I mean, I had got asked the other day, you know, I do a lot obviously in the neurodiversity space and, you know, how do you tell kids about their different brains and the way they're made? And I say I do it the exact same way I tell them how babies are made or where babies come from. Mm. It's just super practical.
It's science. Like, it's cellular.
Exactly. If you're so matter of fact about these things, it actually doesn't create any awkward moments at all.
Yep. And it's also teaching kids about respect and diversity. So we should be talking about gender diversity and sexual attraction and those sort of things, even from an early age.
Mm.
You know, there's some people out there in our society who believe that everybody's gender identity must match their sex assigned at birth and only two sexes, when in fact there's three sexes because there's intersex as well.
Yes.
And I say to those people, we're all entitled to our own opinion, but we're not entitled to harm other people with our opinion, especially children, because there are gender diverse children and they can know that from an early age.
Yeah. One of my very close friends, AJ, who's in this building, is non-binary. And it was so cute the other day. My son, he accidentally said, oh, something about where does she, whatever he said. And I said, well, she's actually a they.
Mm.
And he goes, oh, that's my second. And I said, what? He goes, that's the second they I know, Mum.
Oh.
And he was so happy about it. And it was just so matter of fact and so sweet because that's just the way it should be.
Oh, some people get really caught up on using a person's preferred pronouns, but we use they all the time. For example, we'll say that person's speeding. I hope the police catch them before they kill someone.
Exactly same thing.
It's no big deal and it's just respectful. You know, you wouldn't want to be misgendered. So it's really important to ask and say what would you, my pronouns are she, her. What would you like me to use for you?
Yes.
And I teach teachers that in the classroom. We can say good morning grade five instead of good morning boys and girls.
Yep.
The boys and girls won't notice, but the gender diverse child in that room, they were greeted that morning without being, you know, misgendered. Yes. So it's just simple language.
And we're always learning.
Yeah, and it's just practice. You can actually talk like that all the time and then you're always including everybody.
Exactly.
And we just want an inclusive world, don't we?
We do.
And unfortunately we get a little bit of pushback from some parents with school sexuality education, thinking that what we're teaching is inappropriate. But sexuality education is age-appropriate. Delivered, and we know there's absolutely. I'm starting to use the word unethical for us to withhold this information from children.
I think so,
because the research clearly tells us that when they've had age-appropriate, accurate, comprehensive education from a young age throughout their schooling, they have much better sexual health and well-being outcomes. Mm. They deserve that.
Yes.
It's their human right to learn, as I said before, about bodies and respectful relationships. And, yes, school-based education is fact-based and values should come from home. Mm. And you can always teach your values.
Yeah, and I think going back to that, you know, we were saying about just, you know, it's the people in the room that it affects the most are the ones that don't identify as either boy or girl. I think it's so true, and that's, again, something from a very young age. My son was writing a story the other day and he said, oh, I was writing a story and these boys were bullying this boy because he was wearing nail polish, and we started this conversation and, you know, but how would that make you feel if somebody had done that to you? And he says, well, I just don't understand, Mum. Like, who says it can be a boy or a girl? Aren't we all just human? And I said, yes, we're all just human.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's as simple as that.
And what comes to mind when you're saying that, you're teaching a little child about rigid gender stereotypes, and we know how damaging they can be in relationships later on as well. And there's some great new research from the Man Box for asking adolescents about adhering to rigid gender stereotypes and several other things, that we see commonalities in those people who use sexual violence and use violence against other people. Mm. They have those sort of rigid ideas around how things should be. And
it's as simple as we have brushing to change it off that. Or doing this. Right. How do you suggest or approach that? Because, again, I keep going back to the little kids. I've just had mine in kindergarten and I have overheard different...
Calling it out, you know. So rape culture starts with jokes, and there's a pyramid, we would say, of rape culture, and it starts with disrespect and jokes and those sort of statements that can be made. So you say, oh, that's an interesting thing to say. I wouldn't have thought that about that person. And just move on. You know, my kids roll their eyes all the time because I'm forever calling things out.
Yeah.
But I do try and pick my battles, because I could call, especially turn on commercial radio and TV.
Oh.
There is so much, you know what, there to be able to call out.
Yeah.
And it can be really difficult and uncomfortable for us adults, especially with other adults, and having to call them out, especially when they're our close associates.
Yes.
So, you know, I bring them in on it, send them an article, show them the books that the kids are learning, and it's just about being human, being consenting humans. You know, we live in a non-consensual world. Kids have to go to school. Kids have to line up. We have to get married and death to us part, you know, really thinking about that thing and people having autonomy. It's just a happier, safer world for everybody.
Well, if we could have everyone learning from you and being like you, Vanessa, it would be a much kinder
world.
I'm
not perfect either, so I'm far from it.
And you know what? That's the thing. I'm still learning. That's what I say all the time. I might get it wrong, but I'm still learning.
Yep.
And, you know, that I'm so glad that I got to have a chat with you today and get you here. I mean, it's been a while.
It's been a long time.
I
had to fly all the way here to do this. I said, let's just get this done before 2025 ends.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I'm so grateful because, again, you know, just like the stuff that you talk about, it changes over time, and we just need to keep these conversations happening frequently, often, ongoing. Mm-hmm. Any lasting thoughts?
Never ending. Just give yourselves a break, parents. It's a tough gig.
Yeah.
This is hard. This topic is hard. It's barely spoken about in the past. Bit of deep diving to thinking about what comes up for you when you're thinking about where your attitudes came from. And like I said, do your research, practice your language. When you're driving past a Volvo, say Volva out loud to another adult or to yourself.
Yeah.
So you get better at the language. And just, as I said, just get started. It's easier than you think.
Absolutely. And I am going to throw a question at you because I sometimes do this in the beginning and I didn't. I forgot today because I was so excited to stuck in. If I was to ask you, what's the one thing nobody told you when you first entered into parenthood? I mean, you're a mom, goodness. You've got big boys.
Oh, wow.
What do you think was the biggest shock or that biggest thing that you thought, God, I wish I knew that?
I wish I knew that. One of the biggest things is now that I've got teenagers, and it was probably relevant when they're children as well, was to not react, to stop and listen to what they're actually asking or saying. Just stop and just before you quickly react or try and fix something, be more curious.
Oh, yes, I love it.
I'm practicing. I'm really trying to practice at being more curious rather than, so what's the word that I learned from a great colleague in the UK? So giving children resources rather than discourses. So rather than a story of this is how it should be, a discourse, give them a resource such as, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if the person maybe could have done this instead rather than you have to do this. So give them a resource, which means vocabulary to be able to say something. So be curious.
Love it.
And, yeah, ask questions.
Start early.
That's it. Why not? Start early.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a very juicy chat. I mean,
hasn't it?
We could talk for hours and hours.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to support parents because parents, we all need it.
We all need it.
So thank you for all your work.
No, and thank you. And we'll put all the resources attached to this episode for those that might need it as well. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks.